Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2261, with a release date of Friday, February 26th, 2021. To follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Earthquake researchers partner with HAMS. Australian HAMS weigh in on a proposed license change, and it's time to think about nominating the Young Ham of the Year for 2021. All this and more as Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 2261 comes your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent weekly amateur radio news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Picayune, Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
In our top story for this week, a United States government agency is relying increasingly on amateur radio operators to further their understanding of devastating earthquakes. Ralph Squalacci, KK6ITB, gives us the details.
Ham radio operators are partnering with the U.S. Geological Survey in helping to report real-time details about seismic activity and earthquake damage, especially when other means of communication have gone offline. They're using the radio email platform WinLink to carry data from the survey's questionnaire-based system known as DIFI, for Did You Feel It? ARES members transmit the DIFI reports even if an earthquake has knocked down the region's internet. Receiving stations outside the earthquake region receive the data contained in the WinLink transmission and forward it to the USGS via their own internet access. The DIFI system gathers macro seismic intensity data, allowing scientists to more accurately pinpoint where people felt the earthquake and at what intensity. Researchers also rely on the report's data to further their general study of earthquakes. According to an article on the website EOS, an estimated 90% of DIFI reports are sent by observers within the first hour of an earthquake. HAMS can transmit the reports over VHF, HF, and even local high-speed mesh networks, many of which have the ability to interface with satellite-connected cells on wheels. Cells on wheels have proven useful in emergency response already during the California wildfires of 2017 and 2018. ARES is now promoting the DIFI protocol and training HAMS in California, Washington, Arizona, Hawaii, and Mexico. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Ralph Squalacci, KK6ITB.
HAMS throughout Australia are being asked to weigh in on a fundamental license change being contemplated. John Williams, VK4JJW, tells us what will happen next.
As the Australian Communications and Media Authority seeks input on whether to replace amateur radio operators' apparatus license with a class license, the Wireless Institute of Australia has asked for feedback from members and other interested amateurs. The WIA's formal polling opens this week. The ACMA has stated that it would like to see the class license established. The license would be available without a fee and would not change any amateur privileges, but it would no longer ensure protection against interference. WIA President Greg Kelly, VK2GPK, wrote members calling the proposal, quote, a non-trivial change, unquote, saying it had long-range impact on amateur radio in Australia. In 2004, the ACMA's predecessor, the ACA, did not implement a proposed move for such a license. The ACMA supports the change, however, saying it hopes to reduce its regulatory burden and make costs more bearable for licensees. The WIA poll is available to all radio amateurs in Australia. A link to the online registration is available in the script of this newscast on the AR Newsline website, arnewsline.org. Hams who register will receive their copy of the poll in their email. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm John Williams, VK4JJW.
In the United States, another major retailer that was a mainstay for amateur radio operators is shutting its doors. Fry's Electronics, which did business online and at retail centers throughout the western U.S., announced that online competition and the effects of the pandemic were too much to overcome. The 36-year-old chain had 31 stores in 9 states, with 7 of them in California. Well, it was worth waiting for. A contact at last between the ISS and students in Denver, Colorado. Amanda Alden, K1DDN, has those details.
After dealing with strict COVID safety guidelines and numerous schedule changes, STEM students from John F. Kennedy High School in Denver, Colorado, finally got the green light for their CUSA with Commander Mike Hopkins, KF5LJG, aboard the International Space Station on Wednesday, February 24th. The successful telebridge contact was arranged using a relay station in Portland, Oregon, with David Payne in A7V as the controller. The last ARIS attempt with a school failed to take place because of a technical difficulty. During the 11-minute pass, students were able to ask 20 questions, ranging from the way COVID-19 has impacted space travel to whether any data collection done in space has helped an emergency situation on Earth. In late 2019, the JFK School partnered with members of Rocky Mountain Ham Radio and the Cherry Creek Young Amateur Radio Club, who mentored the students on the use of amateur radio communications to prepare them for their ARIS contact. To hear the contact, visit YouTube at the link printed in this week's newscast script at arnewsline.org.
Friendship has many languages in amateur radio. Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, tells us about one recent net that celebrated all of them.
Amateur radio operators in India, Bangladesh, Indonesia, and elsewhere checked into a special 90-minute friendship net held on the 21st of February, marking the UN's declaration of International Mother Language Day. The more than 100 check-ins came throughout Asia, as well as Mexico, Ukraine, and the United States via Echolink, while those in the Kolkata, India region connected through the local VHF repeater. The net had been organised by the Amateur Radio Society of Bangladesh and the West Bengal Radio Club as a celebration of cultural and linguistic diversity. The United Nations created International Mother Language Day in 2000 in the hopes of fostering multilingualism and a general appreciation for other languages. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
Speaking of languages, which one do you speak? An online project by a YL in Russia has helped hams make their QSOs a little more multilingual. Ed Durant, DD5LP, tells us more.
Radio communication needs language as much as it needs good equipment in the shack. And now, many of the languages of amateur radio are more accessible than ever. A guidebook written 40 years ago by two brothers in Finland, Jukka, OH2BAD, and Mika, OH2BR, has been converted into an online interactive guidebook with the brothers' permission. Raisa, R1BIG, a popular YL in Russia, well known for videos of her amateur radio journey, told Newsline she and a friend, who is an IT specialist, created the online guide over the course of the past few weeks. She said she was inspired by the brothers' original handbook, the Radio Amateurs Conversation Guide, which Yuka had shared with her 2 years ago. With one mouse click, you can now read and hear almost 200 ham radio phrases. 8 languages are available on the site, and more are in the works, including the next one, Polish, being recorded by Darek, SP3TLJ. Raisa herself recorded the Russian language entries, and Pete, M0PSX, is working on a new version of the English language sound files. Although English is still the predominant language heard on the bands, imagine being able to call CQ 20 meters or ask, "When did you first get your license, in Japanese or German?" A link to the online guide can be seen in the printed version of this week's newscast script at arnewsline.org. For Amateur Radio Newsline, this is Ed Durant, DD5LP.
A New England ham's battle to put up radio towers is over, and at last he can start construction. Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, tells us what it took for him to win his case.
Zach Manganello, K1ZK, may well consider himself the recipient of a towering victory in every sense of those words. The longtime amateur spent the greater part of 2020 defending his proposal to install 2 radio towers on his property in the rural part of Vermont. Last summer, neighbors objected to his original proposal for the 84-foot towers, saying they were too high and were damaging to their views. Zach downsized his plans and tried again. He even conducted visual impact tests, floating a balloon to simulate the height of the tower to ensure neighbors' views would remain unaffected. This month, the Telecommunications Review Board of the town of Shelburne granted Zach the right to go ahead with 2 towers, one at 40 feet and the other at 60 feet, both supported by guy wires. According to a report in the Burlington Free Press, the local board decided to give its support to Zach's tower project after being convinced that having backup emergency communications in the neighborhood was a local asset. The report said the panel was impressed as well by Zach's willingness to share the educational aspects of amateur radio with the greater community. All this came as the hoped-for good news for Zach, a lifetime radio enthusiast since his childhood in Maine, and a ham since the age of 14. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the WD8IIJ repeater of the Steubenville-Weirton Amateur Radio Club on Fridays at 8 p.m. local time in the hometown of the late, great Dean Martin, Steubenville, Ohio. The space weather project launched by the HamSci Collective has been getting some pretty prominent notice. Andy Morrison, K9AWM, is here with the details.
Amateur Radio's volunteer space weather watchers have been getting some recognition from the pros lately. A February 9th article in EOS, Earth and Space Science News, gives a respectful nod to the Space Weather Sensor Network created worldwide by Ham Radio Science Citizen Investigation, or HAM-SCI, a collective created by Nathaniel Frissell, W2NAF. The article praises the crowdsourced data hams are able to collect from radio signals, as those signals are influenced by changes in ionospheric propagation. It was co-written by Nathaniel along with David Kasdan, AD8Y, and Christina Collins, both of Case Western Reserve University, W8EDU. EOS is a publication of the American Geophysical Union. The authors discuss how hams monitor what responses the Earth's atmosphere has to different solar activity and the activity's impact on telecommunications and electrical utilities, among other things. The article advocates increased reliance on what hams and their amateur stations can offer. Quote, they write, "With open-sourced instrumentation cheaper and more plentiful than ever before, the time is ripe for amateur scientists to take distributed measurements of the ionosphere, and the amateur radio community is up for the challenge." End quote. With support from the National Science Foundation, HAM-SCI has launched a personal space weather station project to support hams who wish to collect such data to be used in space science research. Publication of the article comes just weeks before HAM-SCI's virtual workshop, which is being held March 19th and 20th. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Andy Morrison, K9AWM.
If you know a young radio amateur who can't wait for camp season, Jack Parker, W8ISH, has some good news for you.
Organizers have affirmed their commitment to hosting this year's Youth on the Air Camp, even as campers from across the Americas who were accepted into last year's canceled camp are completing priority registration now. The camp is scheduled to be open in Ohio from July 11th to the 16th, with COVID-19 safety restrictions in place. Camp Director Neil Rapp, WB9VPG, said in an announcement that a final decision will be made in April about whether the camp must be postponed for another year. In the meantime, applications will be accepted in March for any prospective campers who were not a part of last year's group. The camp will host a maximum of 30 youngsters. Neil wrote, quote, "We are truly hopeful that we can proceed with the camp this summer. We have some exciting plans. We are also looking at an operating event in the summer. Stay tuned," end quote. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jack Parker, W8ISH.
Do these names mean anything to you? Chris Bro, KD8YVJ. Bryant Rascal, KG5HVO. Emily Stewart, KC0PTL. Caitlin Cole, KS3P. They're all past winners of Amateur Radio Newsline's Young Ham of the Year Award, which, since 2015, has carried another name, that of Newsline's late co-founder Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. These award winners mean a lot to us here at Newsline because they make us proud of the generation we're watching grow and flourish. On Monday, March 1st, downloadable nomination forms for this year's candidates will become available on our website, arnewsline.org. If you know a young amateur 18 or younger living in the United States, its possessions, or any Canadian province, and they're devoted to radio and community service, visit arnewsline.org and consider making them your nominee. The award will be presented at the Huntsville Hamfest in Huntsville, Alabama, this August. An adventurous group of radio amateurs has some big plans for a very small island just off the Australian coast. Can you say de-expedition? That's just what Graham Kemp, VK4BB, describes for us here.
What does a group of Aussie hams do when they see the 100th anniversary of one of the last remaining manned weather stations coming up? Well, as the station is difficult to get to, located as it is on a very small 19-acre island, 450 kilometres off Cairns in Queensland, it wouldn't be a simple special event station set up. No, this has to be a proper de-expedition. The group is the Hellenic Amateur Radio Association of Australia, who have a long record of running de-expeditions. The location is Willis Island, which, at number 38, is one of the more wanted locations for DXCC. The hams are hoping to use the call sign Victor Kilo 9 Whiskey, but if not allocated, will use VK9HR, the club's own call sign, from this rare iota island, OC007. If you're looking to add this entity to your collection, get ready for this Aussie team, who will be joined by some international friends heading out to the Coral Sea. They'll be on air 160 through 10 metres between November the 3rd and the 13th, 2021. For more information, check the URL given in the text version on the arnewsline.org website. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Graham Kemp, VK4BB.
In the world of DX, Gareth, M0MOL is on the air as MM0MOL stroke Papa from the main island of Shetland for the remainder of February and into March. He'll be operating QRP with a portable setup. Listen for him mainly in the evenings, local time after work. Send QSLs to his home call sign. The Pride Radio Group is using the special event call sign VI2021 Pride throughout the Sydney Mardi Gras until March 7th. Be listening for operations on SSB and FT8. QSL directly to Michaela Wheeler, VK3FUR, or via the club log OQRS system. The Welland Valley Amateur Radio Society will be putting several special event stations on the air in the months ahead to celebrate the patron saints of England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. The first event will be for the Feast of St. David, patron saint of Wales. Be listening for GB0SD between February 28th and March 2nd. The actual feast day is March 1st. QSL by EQSL, Logbook of the World, and by the Bureau Manager via G4XEX. Finally, have you ever dreamed of having the frequency all to yourself to make that one perfect, historic QSO? Well, it can happen. On Mars. Newsline's Space Cadet Paul Brown, WD9GCO, takes us there.
Talk about operating mobile. NASA's Ingenuity Mars helicopter, prepped to accomplish the first powered flight on that planet, has already achieved its first QSO. According to reports from NASA, the 4-pound helicopter, which is actually a drone, is resting comfortably in the underbelly of NASA's Perseverance rover, which landed on the red planet on February 18th. Its mission is to conduct a test of the first powered flight in the thin atmosphere there, where it is capable of achieving an altitude of no more than 15 feet, or 5 meters. The tiny helicopter employs point-to-point wireless communication with the rover. A day after the landing, the helicopter sent its first message back to Earth via the rover by making use of NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, saying that all systems, including its power supply of 6 lithium-ion batteries, were working as expected. NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory reported that a downlink from the orbiter confirmed that all was well. According to NASA, it will be at least a month before Ingenuity makes its maiden flight. One has to wonder, though, is Ingenuity going to apply for a QSL card? And if so, does that go direct or through a bureau? I got to imagine he's going to need one for that Worked All Planets award. That's a lot of postage. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Paul Brown, WD9GCO.
With thanks to the ACMA, Amateur News Weekly, the ARRL, Burlington Free Press, CQ Magazine, CNN, David Behar, EOS, KCAL Los Angeles, MSN.com, NASA, the Ohio Penn DX Newsletter, QRZ.com, RESA, R1BIG, Southgate Amateur Radio News, ShortwaveRadio.de, Space.com, Ted Randall's QSO Radio Show, the Wireless Institute of Australia, WTWW Shortwave, YouTube, YOTA America's Camp, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Please send emails to our address at newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, arnewsline.org. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wellbanks, AE5DW in Picayune, Mississippi, saying 7-3. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2021. All rights reserved.